Today we're looking at the story, real familiar story to all of you. It's the three men in the fiery furnace. And this has to rank right up there with one of the favorite stories of the Bible, right? Daniel in the lion's den. That's also, we're going through the book of Daniel. Today we're at chapter 3, third Sunday on this. But it ranks up there with Moses in the burning bush, David and Goliath, Jesus in the resurrection, of course. And so this is just a fun story. But I think there's some good lessons to learn from it. It was in the early 1970s, and a man named Caleb, Dunn is his Chinese name, was just a young teenager and a new believer. I think he was about 13 years old, maybe 14, living in Hebei province in China. Not a good time to be a Christian living in China at that time. And two brothers were called in by the authorities. They were from two separate congregations. I don't think they knew one another. And they were given an ultimatum. They were both married. They had children at home. And they were brought before the officials and to renounce their, boy, this happened again, renounce their Christian faith and their allegiance, swear their allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party. And if not, then their personal property in their home would be confiscated. Their home would be bulldozed down. Their family would be disgraced. They would have nothing, and the community would look at them as traitors. Everyone would know about this. This incident would be recorded in their children's school records, and they would be constantly mocked for their father's choice. And these two men were given one day to decide, would they submit and comply? It was an agonizing decision. Well, about that time, I was in Auburn, Alabama. Not going to explain why, but I was discipling some young Auburn University college students. And we were randomly discussing things, and the topic came up about persecution. Not that we were having any, but it was, what would we do? How would we respond to that? I remember one guy saying, well, I'm not so good at making the little decisions and doing things for Christ, but when it comes to the big thing, I'm just going to stand firm. Hands down, I'll count. I think he had some kind of a hero mentality, and I remember thinking, I don't think it works that way. And Jesus had something to say about that. Remember what he said? He said, he who is faithful in little will be faithful in, did you say mush or much? Okay, much. Okay, Jesus, if you're faithful in little, you will be faithful in much. Well, I met Caleb about 25 years after that particular event, and then he shared that story with me. So the first father chose to stand firm, refused to renounce his faith, and confirmed his allegiance to Christ. But the second father was just so tormented over the consequences to his family that he gave in and he chose to renounce his faith in Christ. So the first one lost his home, not his life. But the Christian brothers and sisters around gathered around them and supported them, encouraged them, helped resupply things and develop a new home. The second father retained everything. Everything was fine. Didn't lose anything, but he was so ashamed of his decision and felt so much guilt that not long afterward, he took his own life. So these left a pretty profound impact on young Caleb as he listened to these stories, and he vowed he would always be prepared for the testing of his faith because he knew consequences could be threatening, could be harsh, but he was going to stand firm. He knew God was able to protect him, but even if he did not, then Caleb was going to stand firm. So he has remained faithful. I'm keep in touch with Caleb. I heard about him most recently, about a month and a half ago, and he's just doing fine. And life hasn't been easy for Caleb. He's been arrested multiple times. He's had all kinds of threats. He's been under house arrest more than once, but Caleb knows how to stand firm. So this morning, our message is, our God is able, but if not, then what do we do? What's it going to be like? So if you have your sanctuary Bible, and that should be in a little rack right under your this chair in front of you. It's on page 739. We're going to be looking at Daniel chapter 3. The story takes place. The story of the fiery furnace. The year is about 590 to 570 BC. Followers of God have lived under threatening times for a long time. Sometimes in some places of the world today, we still are. So that's where we're at. So we're going to move on. I'm going to skip that one. And here we have the issue. It's the attraction of the tide of society. Everybody needs to participate. Remember last week, Pastor Matt talked about chapter 2. And chapter 2 was Nebuchadnezzar, and he had this fantastic dream. And the challenge was he wanted the leaders of society to tell him what the dream was, because he had forgotten part of it. And then he wanted them to interpret it. That was impossible. Daniel, though, God gave him what the dream was. He recalled it, explained it to Nebuchadnezzar, and then interpreted it for him. So if you remember, there were four parts to it. The first part was talking about something that was gold. Second part, silver. Third part, bronze. And the fourth part was iron with some clay mixed in. So what part of the body was the gold, if you remember? The head. Now, come on, Bethel Free Church people. I know a lot of you were in church last Sunday because I looked at you too. Okay, so the head was gold. And who did the head represent? King Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so now we have King Nebuchadnezzar again, another part of the story sometime later on. And he's building this fantastic monument or statue. And the whole thing is gold. So it's a bit speculative, but we think that probably what he was thinking is, I'm not sure I like this idea that the gold is going to end and be replaced by another kingdom designated as silver. And so perhaps his thought was, you know, I think I'd like to change this plan a little bit and make sure my kingdom lasts forever. And so let's just make a gold statue in my honor and have the whole thing be gold. So that's what we're presented with. So let's look at verses 1 and 2. King Nebuchadnezzar, if you have your Bibles, page 700-something, 39, Daniel chapter 3, we'll start verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So 60 cubits high. What's a cubit? A cubit is about this much. So basically top your finger to your point of your elbow in a man's hand. Of course, that's different with everybody. So it's about 18 inches. And 60 cubits then is about 90 feet high. What's 90 feet high? This thing is just a tad more than 90 feet high. So this is our Martin County Courthouse. So the top of this gold statue was right about at the top of the clock. Pretty big image that people were going to be standing before and facing. Well, this was quite a grand event, and so we continue reading. So then the satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And then they stood at the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O people, nations, languages, that when you hear the sound of..." Get ready for these lists to occur over and over again. "When you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the tyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar set up." A trigon is like maybe our little triangle, or it could be the precursor to a small harp. Okay, so he's got all of these things that are set up. This is a really, really big, grand event. If you think maybe in terms of British royal wedding or the coronation of a king, that's kind of what's going on here. Of course, they didn't have internet or things, and so they would send these heralds out all across the whole empire of the Babylonians and announce this thing and calling on the officials all to come back to the plain of Dura to prepare for this special ceremony. So lots of officials would return, and then, of course, the music. Wasn't just a bunch of noise that was going on, but special music would be written for these people. And then they would have the best musicians of the nation to gather around, rehearse, and prepare. And so this was beautiful and gorgeous and full of color. And then you have all of these officials in their grand attire, and there they are. They're standing there, and they're waiting, and then the herald announces. So they're there. They're wondering, okay, now we're here. What happens? And then they hear. You've got to, at the sound and the completion of the music, bow down and worship. Well, what would motivate you to bow down and worship if you were there? Now, think about what's in the plain of Dura. There's two objects. The obvious one is this grand 90-foot-high statue and this fantastic music that's going on. And so that might be the thing that motivates you and you might be inspired by it. But there was another object in the plain of Dura that was a pretty big thing, and that was a furnace. And you could hear the rumbling of the furnace in the background, I think. And so that might have been in the back of your mind. So what would motivate you to stop, to bow down? Which one? And so that's what was going on. And that's what, it would be real obvious if you had who knows how many thousand officials were there and everyone is bowing down. It'd be obvious if some didn't. I'm not sure how they did that. You know, would you kind of go like this and just kind of look and see who's right up there, you know? And so that could be how these Chaldeans did that. Okay, so there's a social issue and the threat that they would be cast into the fire. And so now there's an attempt to coerce the faithful. And so we have, let me back up. Yes, that's what we did. And so we have this event coming up. Where am I in my notes? Verses 8. So we have somebody that is not cooperating. Let's continue reading. So therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans, they're like astrologers, brilliant, educated men. Certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. Well, that means something to say that they maliciously accused them, because obviously there was a little bit of intrigue happening in the courts. Jealousy, envy, and they were watching. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you've appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to name them." Well, notice it wasn't all Jews that were not bowing down, but certain Jews. Probably lots of them thought, there's no harm in doing this. This is just a worthless image. I don't take it seriously. It's meaningless. Boy, if I don't bow down, and they glance over at that furnace, and they go, that's a pretty nasty outcome. I'm in a good position. I'm in an influential position. I'm at a place where I can make a difference. Well, if I bow down to this thing, get thrown in the fiery furnace, and I'm killed, then what kind of good influence can I have in this country? And so I think we could appreciate that there's a reasonable amount of good rationalization that's going on here by probably most of the Jewish leaders or people who are in positions of influence. And so they struggled with this issue. And a lot said, I don't think it's worth it, and I think the outcome would be better for our people if I just cooperate. I mean, this is meaningless obeisance to a meaningless idol. And so, probably many bowed down, but of course we know that three did not, and they were named. And now they are targeted. So we continue with verse 12. And then these Chaldeans say, "These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." So we continue. Then Nebuchadnezzar was in furious rage, and he commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered the Chaldeans, and he said to these three, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image that I've set up?" He doesn't wait for their answer, and he continues. "And now if you're ready, I'm going to give you a second chance. Can't believe you guys did this. A little bit merciful here. Let you going to try it one more time." These are pretty important guys to him, and he just didn't want to flippantly eliminate them, and so he gives them a second chance. So now he says, "When you hear the sound of the hornpipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I've made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace." And here is the question. "And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" That's the question we want to be asking. So, is this God that you believe in actually real? Or do you just imagine there is such a thing as God? And that's a fair question. Anybody can ask you, if you're a believer in God, a follower of Christ, is it real? Is it fake? Show it. Where is he? And so here was the question. What God is able to save you? In the last few years in China, an interesting thing has been going on. And so government officials have been sent out to any kind of place of worship and even to a lot of homes. And they've been looking for pictures or images, so images of crosses or pictures of Jesus or something like that. And then they ask some questions. And so they mock those who have those things and say, "So you think Jesus really provides you with food and security?" No, he doesn't. The one who provides you with food and what you have, your livelihood and your employment, is General Secretary Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party. This is foolishness. God doesn't provide you with health service. General Secretary Xi Jinping does, and the Chinese Communist Party. You need to take these things down. They're misleading and deceitful, and so they would remove all of those things and replace them with a picture of Xi Jinping. So that's going on today, and what's going on in China. So what might bowing down to an image for us Americans living in 2023, what might that look like? Here's a definition that maybe we could consider. Bowing to an image is my choice to make something a priority. Bowing to an image is my choice to make something a priority. Giving something the highest value. It's what I do or what I like or what I'm interested in that I make other things work around. The schedule gets adjusted for this thing or these things. Is that the image we bow down to? It's the thing that excites me the most, or I think about most often, or I commit a lot of time and money to this thing. It's very important. So bowing to an image is my choice to make something a priority. Okay, well, I have been kind of doing an unofficial survey, and I've been asking people the last week or two, what do you think are golden images in our American society today? So I'm going to, I won't say which one of you gave an answer to this. And I'm also going to probably offend every single person here. But some of these are my own issues and problems too. So I'm not pretending that I've got it all figured out. I'm on the journey like you are in learning, admitting, confessing, figuring it out. But here, try these on for size. And be gracious to me in your response, because I'm going to say some things that might irritate you, especially this first one. Sports. I'm a devoted Twins fan. I think it's easier that way because they kind of are just a mediocre team, and so it helps me keep it in balance, so that's good. But now for you, those of you who are Vikings fans, okay, you can admit this now. So I'm wondering, so really is your passion for the Vikings a little bit overboard? So just picture yourself, you're at home, you're with some friends, Vikings score a touchdown. What's your physical reaction to that? All right, they got it, yeah! You know, I mean, it's excitement, a raised voice, you just get pretty crazy. I mean, you might even be Scandinavian, okay? And you just get a little overboard with something that's a sports thing. And then, now let's put you in another context. So you're admitting, yeah, you get pretty excited about things, or Timberwolves, or whatever it is. Now let's put you in church. Well, would you ever be caught raising your hands in praise to God in church? No, we don't do that. I'm Norwegian, and we just kind of keep things under control. And no, you don't, you moron. And look at how you behave with sports things. In a two-year period, I mean, couldn't you get a little bit excited about maybe, how about would you dare shed a tear or two during a worship song at church, because it really was moving? Or have you ever, in this sanctuary, actually, you know, what do they call it? I forgot, there's some funny things. Have you ever done kind of a praise to God, a little cautious one, you know, it's safe, only the person to your right notices it. But what about a full bore, two hand, arms up? I do that sometimes, but I go through a mental exercise beforehand, to be honest with you, and I have to stop and say, Steve, people will notice you, Steve. Oh yeah, and they might think you're just a little carried away there. I have to say, I don't care. It's not about them. And I just want to honor God. Okay, so sports, think about that. And your reaction, your physical reaction, just we'll play around with this idea. Okay, celebrities going crazy to get an autograph or spending money beyond your budget to just kind of get close or go to something that's a celebrity event. How about social media? I'll go fast through these. Getting preoccupied with getting likes. I don't really know what that is. I don't have that thing going on. But younger generation, that's real important. And okay, well, maybe you need some help with that. Why is that so important? Is that an image that you need that gives you motivation? How about retirement funds? Constant anxiety and preoccupation with, will we have enough? Or health, fitness, just being consumed with your body, your looks, your clothing. Family, even grandchildren. Is time with grandchildren, does it trump everything in your life? No matter what, I'll be there. And you'll sacrifice anything for that. Guilty at times. A promotion, getting an impressive title at the workplace, are these your golden image? How about being respected and being honored properly? And when you're not, and when you're offended, and someone says something and others hear it, and you are ashamed and embarrassed, and even if it's not true, you choose to retain that, remember that, you struggle with bitterness or unforgiveness, is that your golden idol, respect and being honored? Money, sex, power, those are all things that attract us. Pornography, attraction, maybe it's just really, really hard to resist. And that has evolved into your golden image. It's something you can't get away from. Maybe it's vicarious living through your children. You weren't such a good athlete in school, but boy, you're going to make sure your kid is. Well, why? What's the point? Is that an image that you're bowing before? How about, now this is going to get me in trouble. How about freedom? For Americans, this is a really, really high altar. It's very unique in the world. Nobody thinks like we do about that the same way. That's a really America. I'm telling you that as someone who's lived outside this country for 4 decades and watched from the outside. And we demand our rights, and we can become more passionate about our political preferences than we do about anything that's Christian or spiritual. Or how about me? It's just me. I think I heard someone just saying, me. That's me. That is me. And so a lot of things are, I want to be happy. Maybe that's the big thing. And if I'm not happy, it's not right. Or if I don't feel good about it, then I'm just going to drop it. So I've stepped on lots of toes, but I've also confessed to you there are a lot of these things that I deal with, struggle with too. So we all do this. And the important thing is to stop and say, what is the golden image in my life? And we have more than one. This might be a very good lunch topic today, is to stop and just have that conversation. Well, what do you think is our golden? Does our family have a golden image that we really struggle with and get preoccupied with? So this is the challenge. What happens when we find or identify this golden image? Well, then we got to make a choice. We've got to stop and think about it. And the outcome may not always be great. The story continues, and we come to this point about these three guys. Now, notice this isn't about one of them, but they are companions, and so they go through this together. And sometimes we need help. We need a safe place, or we need some safe, wise people to just have the conversation with and just say, can I talk about this without being attacked or judged? And maybe I need some airtime to explore this idea. And you ask for help. So two things are going to come up in this next section. And pay attention to what they are. The first one is someone is missing. And then the second one is they admit there's no guarantee. So we come to the next few verses, 16 to 19. Now Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar. I think it's interesting they didn't say, O King Nebuchadnezzar. They just said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you've set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was just filled with fury. Expression on his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and he ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. Wasn't exactly 7 times, but it was heated to the max. So where's Daniel? The last verse, the previous chapter, verse 49, we read Daniel was told, he not only explained the dream, but then the king was so honored that he promoted Daniel and gave him a position in the highest court, in the royal court. And it says Daniel stayed at the royal court. So now we find a little bit later, that's probably where he is. And he's not out on the plain of Dura. And these three guys, faithful to Daniel, his companions, they're on their own. So here they are without their leader. How about you? When tensions come, pressure is high, you need to make a critical choice, and your leader isn't unavailable, someone you turn to help you think through these things. Are you ready? Could you stand up? Sometimes that's intentional on God's planning. and he keeps your leader preoccupied with something so that you can stand on your own. And God would believe that you are prepared to make the right decision. And so that might be what's happening. So what are the stakes for these three guys? Well, I'm giving you a second chance or you're going to be burned alive. They can't say, wait a minute, well, we'd like to discuss this among ourselves and make sure we're all on the same page. That didn't happen. They were ready and prepared to suffer the consequences. It's fascinating to me that on the principle of being faithful to God and not worshiping another image, they were ready to give up their lives and lose all of their influence and position. So, second thing is there's no guarantee that this would lead to a wonderful outcome. The king asks, verse 15, who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? And someday we might face a decision like that. Maybe our government, like what's going on in China. The question is who is the God who will deliver you out of our hands? And we must choose how we will respond. So their immediate answer is, God is able, but if not, let's move on. And so now we have this fascinating experience. And so he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats. This isn't really a hat. Think of a turban, more likely. Middle Eastern turban kind of thing, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was so urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed the men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Well, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he jumped out of his chair, he rose up in haste, and he declared to his counselors, didn't we cast three men bound into the fire? And they said to the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, but I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods or a son of deity. So here's what goes on. Their defiance enraged the king. The furnace is heated to the maximum. Three are fully dressed in their attire, tied up, thrown in. The great heat burns up the strong soldiers that tossed them. The three aren't harmed. They're standing upright in this furnace. One thing only is burned up, and that's the ropes that bound them. They weren't hopping on hot coals, but they were walking around and talking, and a fourth one appeared to them, a son of the gods or a son of deity. Nebuchadnezzar equates this to maybe an angel who might have been. We don't really know, and it could be that was the presence of Christ in that moment. And so the announcement continues, and Nebuchadnezzar makes an interesting declaration. Earlier, he said, and what God is able to save you? And he answers his own question right here. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the burning fiery furnace, and he said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Here's the answer to his question. Servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Notice he didn't ask the fourth one to come out. Might have been a tad intimidated by that one. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, prefects, governors, king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair on their heads wasn't singed. Their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god but their own. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn Pretty serious business here. Limb from limb, and their house is laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. And the final verse says, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province. So here's some of our question that we end up with. Application. So what? What do we want to learn from this? Here's a question for you to think about. How are you doing in the little areas of your life? Little things like being honest, being truthful, maybe paying attention to how you can help other people, just being intentional about that. Responding to anger with kindness. Probably you won't be tortured for being those kinds of things, but when we are tempted with little compromises every day, how do we respond? We set a pattern, and that pattern is going to help us as we move along. The response to the fiery furnace from these three was actually predictable. And we saw in chapter 1 the kind of people they were and the choices they made. They're willing to take risks to be faithful to God, and in the end, they were honored. So, what about the little things in your life that set a pattern? Here's the second one. I gave you this list from sports to me of what could be the golden image in our life. So, lunchtime today, don't point your finger at somebody else and say, I think this is your golden image. Just think about you and what might it be and label it. I've been thinking about it this week and wondering, I wonder if I need to make a little change in something in particular. Just think of one area. Don't try to deal with everything, but be realistic and ask God to help you get a perspective on it. Finally, the goal of our life is not to avoid fiery furnaces. Not all the Jews resisted. And those who gave in were fearful of the fiery furnace and the bad outcome. The goal isn't to avoid bad outcomes. The goal is to be faithful. And when we're faithful, then there is no smell of fire. And that's what we want. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this ancient story that we can learn so much from. Prompt our minds, our thoughts. Help us to identify what might be a golden image in our life. And give us the courage to learn how to respond. Stand with us. Help us to lean into your grace and your power and presence. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.